All you have to do is tell a friend or colleague.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Everybody is to leave here immediately. This cafe is closed until further notice. Clear the room at once.
How can he close me up on what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Round up the usual suspects.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
New government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat and put on the Kevlar. It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism, one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American? I suspect you are. So welcome to the show. We got a lot of things to talk about here on Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, a21r.com. That's a21r.com. And of course, newcaliforniastate.com, newcaliforniastate.com. And ncs51.com. Both of them, they're up and running. We're getting tons of hits. We're getting tons of people signing up for the New California State movement. We're exploding all of us. Shocking. I know you're shocked to find new statehood going on here. It's wonderful. And I want to thank everybody who's supporting New California. And, you know, I'll tell you, we are reverberating in many, many different ways. And one of the ways that I'll talk about in the second part of this hour is my communications now that's starting to become established with the California State Legislature, which, of course, as you know, Article 4, Section 3 of the Constitution says we have to work with, as citizens who want to form a new state, with the legislature. And boy, are they clamoring to talk to me. All of a sudden, I'm real popular over the last several days because of the dictatorial stuff that's going on with our governor here, Gavin Newsom. He's really, truly out there as a dictator, and they are admitting it, Republicans and Democrats. Of course, there's very few Republicans in the state legislature of California, you know. But the Democrats are actually admitting it, too. And they're scared. I mean, there's like real fear that's being generated. But that's not us. We're just the answer to, we're the cure for totalitarianism. Anyway, I'd like to welcome to the show, though, our special guest today, and we have Ryan Gerdusky, and he's written a book along with Harlan Hill, They're Not Listening, How the Elites Created National Populist Revolution. And Ryan, how dare you come out with this kind of talk about the populist and the elites. Welcome aboard.
Thank you for having me.
Well, so what prompted you to write this book right now?
Well, I wrote it. I wrote an article for the American Conservative Magazine last year, and it was about national populism, not only in a global context, but in a historical context, because I think many people, after Trump was elected, after Brexit happened, kind of sat there and said, oh, wow, this new thing is kind of exploding. And afterwards, you know, there was Bolsonaro and several other elections. But what they really hadn't seen was that for the last 20 years, you've seen this movement towards national populism across the globe. In nations as diverse as Angola in Africa to Australia and Israel and India and places that have very little to do with each other, except for a rejection of the kind of orthodoxy that was coming out of elite institutions and the government.
You know, and so what you're saying here, and I understand, but I want to clarify with the audience, is that this is not a movement just of the United States. This is a movement worldwide.
Right, and I think that's so important to sit there and contextualize, because, you know, so many people in the media especially sit there and chop this all down to just being a bunch of angry, old, mostly white people from the Midwest.
Right.
And that's really what it is. They're just old white reactionaries, and their anger is over exclusively immigration. Well, I mean, that's a big part of it, but that's not the entire thing, and nor is that the entire message for the world. I mean, you have things like, sovereignty issues, things about economics that matter immensely, a million different things that sit there and really kind of create a situation where national populists can get elected in countries as wildly varying as, you know, as the ones I've mentioned before. And I think that's really something to examine. So that's what we do in the book. We examine them based on the issues that move and motivate people across the globe, and we give instances of that. So for illegal immigration, the book starts with conversations about what's going on in Angola and what's going on in Chile. Angola has a tremendous illegal immigration problem from the Congo, and they actually have a really effective government program to deal with the illegal immigration, far more effective than the United States does, even though the GDP of our DHS is actually larger than the whole GDP of our budget of DHS is larger than the entire economy of Angola.
Sure.
And the whole argument there is that it's not about the ability to sit there and do something because of the cost. It's about the willpower and the political willpower. And we go country by country by country and the willpower that each country's had to sit there and handle things like illegal immigration and legal immigration, too.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I first became aware of this because I think you were on Tucker Carlson's show. And
yes,
he actually, before you were on his show, I believe, he came up with this whole notion. I think he had probably read your book by then, but he came up with this. This is when I first heard about it. And he mentioned Angola and some of their problems and how they're handling things. And if we could, because it's a similar problem, this illegal immigration and immigration across the borders. See, I call illegal immigration in this country the trafficking in human flesh and slavery because of all the things that that connotes when you have illegal immigration.
Especially, well, that's a pretty long term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the reason is because, you know, people are being bought and sold, literally, as we understand it in Mexico. And I've been down there many times, so I get the whole routine about what goes on with that whole group of people. And I also professionally has had a lot of experience in dealing with trafficking, child sex trafficking in particular. So I know how this whole
right.
thing functions. But do they have slavery similar to what we used to see when I understand that in certain countries, they actually have slave markets, even.
Well, yes, there are countries. Slavery is still. What you call it? Very pervasive in parts of our world right now. I think it's Martinique that has slavery. I might be wrong on the country. There are countries, though, in North Africa, in Libya, certainly.
Libya,
after
yeah.
Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama overthrew Gaddafi, slavery exploded. I mean, it encompassed an entire region. I mean, even Obama called it an asshole situation. I think that it's important to sit there and note that when you talk about the world, because, you know, I think the problem with America right now and Americans is that we just have a very kind of isolated view of what is going on in our world, especially on the left. The left is there, and they kind of, I mean, in the, especially the last few months, they've talked so much about race and racism and the history of slavery, and they have no freaking clue as to what they're even talking about.
Exactly.
I mean, they talk about them as if they are, I mean, and you heard Senator Tim Kaine, Democrat Senator Tim Kaine from Virginia, sit there and say that we invented slavery. These people don't know basic human history.
Right.
You know, the sins of America are not exclusive to America. They're sins of human nature. You know, Europeans enslaved other Europeans, Africans enslaved Europeans, Middle Easterners enslaved Africans. It was, I mean, Asians, I mean, same thing. It's all over the world. It's pervasive the world. What we did that was different was we fought a civil war to end it. And many other places didn't end it until, I mean, there's some countries that didn't end it until 2000. And it's still not, I mean, it's ended officially, but it's still there. They still do it.
Right.
So we don't. I think this basic lack of human history is really, really, really hurtful and damaging to our country as a whole. And that's why I thought writing this book, bringing up these issues like legal immigration, illegal immigration, sovereignty, foreign policy, and economics that works for working class people. They are. It's important to note, and it's important to sit there and have this conversation because so many people in the world just don't fully understand it. And you know, if you are a supporter of that ideology, this book is very important because it's chock full of facts. There's 700 citations in this book. You can learn, you know, anything you possibly want to know about this subject matter to formulate the best, most coherent argument you can possibly make. But if you're an opponent of it, let's say you believe in liberalism and you believe in globalism, and if that's fine if you do, but this book makes you understand why you have been losing in corners of the world for going on for, you know, the last 20 years. Because even if Trump is not reelected, Modi was just elected in India. You have the rise of Abe in Japan. You have anti-liberalism surging across the entire globe. Trump and just the personality of Donald Trump kind of take so much of our attention away that we lose focus, but all of these things are still moving and still surging in one general direction.
Yeah, and Trump is trying to stop a lot of it. That's pretty evident to me. But the notion that people in general, and I totally agree with you. We in the United States and in all over in the United States really don't get it. We really don't understand how the elites have. Well, I mean, my listeners do because we do Agenda 21 business and all that other stuff. But I wanted to get to the point, actually. What's the central points of leadership? Who's behind all this elitism that we're seeing here in this populist movement?
Well, there's no one individual. You know, I write this in the book. America is a nation that always has to have a mission. We need a national mission. And we always have since basically our founding. Whether it was going out west or defeating the Soviet Union, we are a nation that needs a national mission. After the Cold War ended, we basically looked around and wept because we have slayed all the giants kind of deal. And George H.W. Bush, who was the president at the time, sat there and he formulated that the new global mission of the United States was going to be to expand liberalism around the globe. No one co-signed that agreement. No one in America sat there and said, this is a great idea. And in fact, George H.W. Bush campaigned in 1988 as being the anti-war candidate who was going to reduce the size of our military and reduce our projects abroad. We're going to return to normalcy, which is kind of like, you know, we've heard for now 30 years returning to normalcy. We don't even know what that means anymore. But we had George H.W. Bush do it. He didn't obviously return to normalcy. He fought wars for liberalism. Then in 1992, Bill Clinton campaigns on the same theme, anti-war candidate, you know, reduce the military spending, reuse that money, bring it home, you know, help the working class people, does none of those things for 8 years. Then we have George W. Bush, a humble foreign policy, same conversation as Bill Clinton. Obviously, we know how that turned out. 2008, Obama, Prince of Peace, anti-war candidate, 8 more years of absolutely nothing changing. So that's generally how kind of we've transformed as a nation in those 30-year period, certainly on foreign policy. But there's a bigger deal when it comes to the elite when it comes to their how they think of the world and how they see the world versus how working class people see the world, because they belong to elite institutions, they belong to hyper small organizations, and also, I mean, I forget, it was Charles Murray. It was in Charles Murray's book that we cite this study that if you are back in, like, let's say, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, it was very common for a neighborhood to have people of varying groups of economic well-being. It was not unusual for a poor kid to know a rich kid and vice versa. There was a great sort starting in the 1980s where it became less and less and less and less frequent to know someone outside of your economic and educational class. And there was an evolution in the psyche of people who are in the elites towards ideas of patriotism, towards ideas of community, towards ideas of values, towards the ideas of even race, especially. And I talk about this in the book, about wokeism, about how, you know, it is white liberals are the only group in America to look at members of their own race and have inherently negative feelings towards them. It is a unique and phenomenon that only belongs to white liberals of America. These things all shape the mind, and because they ran the country and they ran education and they ran media and they ran the government, we moved lockstep in that direction. And kind of regular Americans looked around and said, where did our country go? And we just, it was like we were frogs in slow boiling water. By the time 2016 had turned around, we sat there and said, what the hell's going on over here?
Yeah.
So, I think that is really how the evolution of the elites went on. And because they are motivated by orthodoxy, they believe things like diversity is always good. Our foreign policy is necessary. There is no conditioning. All we are left to debate is, you know, the 5% on the basic income tax. Like, that is what they is acceptable debate in their version of the Overton window. So we are never having an argument that actually benefits working class people when it comes to immigration or trade or sovereignty or foreign policy, or any of those wars, or any of those issues. And I'll break it down, and I don't know how much time I have left, but I'll break it down.
A couple more minutes. You're fine.
Oh, okay. For 8 years, George W. Bush campaigned as hard as he possibly could across red state America, red county America, and after 8 years of two very hard-fought elections where it was very socially ostracizing to be a Bush supporter, what did red state America, what did red county America look like after 8 years? It was 5 million factory jobs went overseas,
right?
Mass deindustrialization, illegal immigration like no one had ever seen before, continued open borders, a flood of opioids, a mass epidemic. All of these things happened, and they primarily happened to red state and red county America. Who got rich during those 8 years? Silicon Valley, Wall Street.
Yep.
Washington, D.C.
Yep.
Same thing with Obama. That's not a failure of a political party, because it's a bipartisan thing. It is a failure of an ideology, and it is the ideology of neoliberalism. It is the ideology that the elites have rammed through our throats for 30 some odd years. And I mean, it's great that Donald Trump is who he is. At the same time, it is a burden for messaging sometimes for who he is, because the personality gets lost behind the messages. But It is so fundamental that Americans sat there and said, I really don't want another war hawk who wants to overthrow more dictators on countries I can't find on a map, who wants to export more jobs, who wants to sit there and say everything's fine and belittle people. And that's what Hillary Clinton did. I mean, she belittled people, and after she lost the election, she said, my counties are diverse and energetic and make money in your counties. They lose money there. Backwards, and Obama called them backwards. He said, you know, people cling to their guns and their Bibles. And Joe Biden now, I mean, he has sat there and said, we're going to return to normalcy. Well, what is normalcy for him?
In the basement.
Joe Biden's version of normalcy is the 20 years that completely gutted working class people across this country.
Yeah. We're talking to Ryan Gadusky, and he's written a book called They're Not Listening, How the Elites Created the National Populist Movement or Revolution, and you can find it on Amazon and other booksellers out there. The big question going forward, what does it look like, and I'll give you two scenarios, what does it look like in a 2020 election victory for Donald Trump? And I'll ask you the other side of that in a second, what it would look like for Biden. But what do you think it would look like for our nation going forward with a 2020 victory for Trump?
Well, I think that I think that Trump's instincts are pretty good. He surrounds himself with a lot of terrible people, which is extremely problematic, and it always has been problematic. And it's, you know, that's not, has not gone away. And as frustrated though as we are, what does it look like? I hope he has an infrastructure bill done. I think he can get that done. I think he can get things like medical pricing done, and I think that's really, pharmaceutical prices done. I think that's really important. You know, Gilead, the country that made the new coronavirus medication, took $70 million of taxpayer money. The estimated cost of the drug, or the estimated price they wanted the drug to be, was $300. They're charging $3,000. Yeah. That's criminal. I mean, it's just criminal to sit there and take taxpayer money and then overcharge taxpayers. Things like that, he can get wide bipartisan support on, and hopefully in a second term he does, and that would help working class people. If Biden becomes president, it's going to be really bad. If he has a Democratic House and Democratic Senate, the first thing they're going to do is push through an amnesty bill, and they're trying to get citizenship for 20 million illegal aliens in this country, and hopefully never have to worry about electing a Republican president ever again. I mean, that's really what's at stake if Joe Biden becomes president. So I know, like, I tell people all the time, does Trump's tweets annoy me? Absolutely. Does Trump's rhetoric sometimes, you know, piss me off? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, the alternative is horrendous. The alternative is as bad as it possibly comes. And any progress we have made pre-COVID, because obviously the economy with the coronavirus has really devastated a lot of people, but pre-COVID, working class wages finally saw a rise. Even after COVID, Trump has sat there and froze H-1B and H-2B workers. He's actually doing something for the American public. For the first president in my lifetime, and as frustrated as it sometimes gets, and as many people sit there and say, he's not a perfect person or he hasn't accomplished all of his goals, I still sit there and say the alternative is a nightmare, and we cannot allow ourselves to sit there and have, you know, be like Cass with a laser pointer looking at all his tweets. You need to look at the big picture. And the big picture is working class, middle class people for the first time have an advocate. And Peter Navarro has plans to bring back jobs from China. That would happen in the second term presidency. The main thing I think Trump really would focus on, besides the issues I talked about with healthcare and infrastructure, the CCP is our main threat in this world. The Chinese Communist government pose an absolute threat to our existence as we've known it. Joe Biden has never had a good instinct when it comes to China, voted for normalizing trade relations, son has weird business dealings with the CCP, everything possibly that you could look at and say, that looks sketchy to me. Trump at least has Peter Navarro in his corner, who is sitting there and advocating to bring back jobs from China, sit there and crack down on China stealing our technology, stopping Chinese spies from working in our universities, which the Justice Department has successfully started doing. All of those things, I think, are so, so important. And it's so important not to get stuck on, like, you know, the shiny tweets and whatever, and actually look at the big picture.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. And, of course, out here in California, we're doing the new California State Movement, and with the communist Chinese, the party, you know, is very, very influential out here with just about every politician. You know, you start to look at Pelosi and Feinstein and that whole cadre of people, even Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom, Jerry Brown, the whole cavalcade of people are all in on China, which is one of the reasons why he, you know, of course, Gavin Newsom went out and bought $1 billion worth of COVID masks, you know, that were no good, by the way. But anyway, the tentacles are very, very thick out here. And of course, Silicon Valley, the universities, UC system, chock full of Chinese students, pushing out American students, I might add. So listen, Ryan, I want to thank you very much for being with us here on Agenda 21 Radio. Ryan Gurdusky, he's written the book called They're Not Listening, How the Elites Created the National Populist Revolution. And I really look forward to having you back on the show again, Ryan. You did a great job. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And you can get the book anywhere books are sold, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be back. You're listening to Agenda 21 Radio. Give me the house.
protecting your phone conversations from snooping agencies, foreign governments, and those who would use your conversations to hurt you and your family is the most important action that you can take today. DEF, Defense Enabling Assisting Framework, protects all your conversations and text messages. Don't find your conversations on social media sites or in the storage bins with big governments around the world. Protect your conversations today with the DEF system. I've used the DEF system since 2014 and have been 100% protected. Go to a21r.com, that's a21r.com, and sign up for the DEF system today. That's a21r.com and sign up for the DEF system today. Protect your conversations today with the DEF system.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Call 800-266-4715. That's 800-266-4715 and use the promo code AGENDA. 800-266-4715, promo code AGENDA.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
Agenda 21 Radio is brought to you by Aram Solar. Yes, if you want to make sure your house is powered and you want solar, go to Aram Solar. But also, because of the recent behavior of California, boy, how appropriate it is we're talking about that right now. Shutting off power to 43 counties is not a fun thing. And by the way, it doesn't need to happen. But if it does happen, you need to be prepared. Get yourself a generator for your house. Aram Solar can do just that. It can provide electrical power at any time for any shortage that pops on. If your power pops off, they will pop on with a generator. All you need to do is give them a call at 866-676-5276. That's 866-676-5276. That's Aram Solar, the best solar you can get, but also the best generation you can get when your house runs out of energy. Don't let yourself be held hostage by the energy companies any longer. That's 866-676-5276, Aram Solar.
Deep in a bunker, way behind enemy lines, broadcasting the truth about what's really going on. Agenda 21 Radio.
And welcome back to Agenda 21 Radio. I'm really wired for sound right now. All three of my ears are on. No, I'm sorry. Two of my ears are on. Boy, I'll tell you. When you're in the studio, you don't get the full effect of when you get it on the phone or your digital device. And so I was doing a little sound checking in the course of the break here and doing our sound check because we had this little issue going on last Friday for Red State Talk Radio. Seems that, you know, some people don't like what we say on Red State Talk Radio. Shocking. I'm shocked by that, aren't you? So anyway, it didn't stop us. No. We're way too smart for their little problems. Anyway, yeah, isn't that interesting? That whole thing. I didn't get it out of them, but the mention of Agenda 21, which is the global elitist way of doing things, right? That was a very, very interesting. Very, very interesting part of things. And I just wanted to kind of bring that one up. I thought it was very, very interesting, but I didn't get to that yet. I think this guy's going to come back to the show. I think there's much more in that book, and I haven't read the whole thing. I've read a lot of the back information on it. And he was supposed to be with us on Friday. He was our Friday guest, but then we couldn't broadcast in the third hour. Shockingly, absolutely shocking that we couldn't broadcast in the third hour. And of course, the reason being naturally that we had a little bit of a problem. Yeah, we were being shut down. So we rescheduled him, and he showed up No problem, you know, talk to him and all that good stuff like you always do. And A.J. Rice, who's our booker, has done another fabulous job. We don't put all the really good guests we could possibly put on because, you know, we're too busy or we got some other things going on. But, boy, when we get them. They're good. They're very, very good. Okay, so we had a little situation going on about Gavin Newsom and all the masking and all that stuff. And in the last hour, you listened to Peggy Hall talk about why you shouldn't be wearing the mask and the fear mongering and all the things that they're doing to us. The lies, the blatant lies with these public service announcements, these PSAs are going on about how you should look with a mask on, and this is that and the other and the mask and all that. I told the story about the waitress that we talked to who is, you know, getting hypoxia, which is too much. And she talked, she openly talked, and, you know, we asked her to take her mask off. She said, oh, thank you. And so she, you know, started to explain about her hypoxia, and we're going, well, you just don't wear a mask. You can't do that. Because hypoxia is a real thing. And young person, by the way, a young person. Masks are designed to prevent you from spreading something, usually bacteria, because bacteria are much bigger than viruses. So these masks that you're breathing in and out, you're still breathing in and out the viruses. So very capable. And plus, you know, I saw it for the first time. I have to admit, I saw it for the first time. Those new shields that are out there. I saw two ladies with it on yesterday at the grocery store. I couldn't believe it. With these shields, and then they had the masks on. No gloves, shockingly. No gloves. But they had this mask, you know, the full plastic shield that goes down below your chinny chin chin, right? Well, they had each had two chins, but, you know, so they had to go the extra mile. But I just, like, wow. You go, girls. All for nothing. Because it's a hoax. See, that's the thing that scares me, is so many people have been hoaxed into this. And you have government entities that are bowing down, taking a knee, like in Orange County with Newport Beach, with the beach and all this other good stuff. Fear that they're going to be fined by the county. Now, that, talking to, last night on the phone, we had about 300 people that called in. We're part of the New California Sunday Night Call. We're getting those really good numbers, by the way. Their numbers are growing and even more so. By the end of this month, we'll have, I suspect, 1,000 listeners on those calls every night. At least that's what's going to happen, because the numbers are growing and we see that. And we have growth hormone coming for New California. Anyway, but one of the callers said that was kind of interesting that the way this whole thing has been rolled out, it's almost like some sheriffs and some law enforcement places are compromised because they are cooperating so cleanly with the governor. And it hit me that most of the law enforcement that we had, and by the way, we had a great turnout Saturday, and a lot of great things happened at the rally that we had. It was a rally, 4th of July rally and car show, put on mainly by the four counties. It was Sutter County, Yuba County. They were the main sponsors. Butte County and Shasta County showed up, and Contra Costa County showed up. So a lot of counties showed up. And it was interesting. Did I say? Yeah, I got Sutter and Yuba. Okay. Anyway, it was a great, great thing. And law enforcement was there, and that was the reason why we had it. We wanted to make sure that we thanked law enforcement, our sheriffs and local police and stuff. And it was a great turnout. They were there, and it was just wonderful to have that kind of camaraderie going on and to show our support for law enforcement, because it's really a needed thing. Maybe these people that are kind of caving in and they just need love, maybe, you know? They need love rather than to take a knee. They need to show strength rather than take a knee. Taking a knee is not showing strength, by the way. It's showing very much weakness, and that's the way it's perceived by your enemies. That's a fact. But maybe we should have more outreach or something like that. I just know that our outreach, as far as New California is concerned, has been really well received by law enforcement throughout the state that we've contacted. We haven't contacted everybody, but the ones where we've contacted them, very receptive. Very, very receptive to what we're doing with New California. So anyway, it's kind of interesting the way this whole thing plays out. We're going to come up to a break. When we come back from break, I'm going to be reading you some information about how things went over the weekend. And with this whole thing about the shutdown, which there doesn't seem to have been a need for a shutdown because there was a court stay, yet they were still enforcing it with the court stay. Right? Because nobody knew about it. No one was talking about it. That seems to be the problem. Yeah, it's just the way the news gets around, right? And that's another thing about news is everybody's compartmentalized their own, and they've diced it up about how they get the news. And it's hard to sometimes get one story to connect with the other. It's hard to connect the dots. And when you do connect the dots, it's strong stuff. I get it. You know, I totally get it. That's what we're in the connect the dot business, the new business model. Connect your dots. That's what we do. We connect your dots for you. Should that be one of our mottos or saying for Agenda 21 Radio? We can connect your dots. But I think that people are getting the parsed up news. And then because we have so many devices, we have more channels now to choose from. You know, back in the day, when there's black and white TV, you really only had three channels. Or maybe you had a local channel. But there was always the three national channels, CBS, ABC, and NBC. That was it. And then all of a sudden, you know, in the 80s, the explosion of not just digital, but it was analog then, but TV stations because of satellites. Satellites were coming on in vogue, and we were able to send signals up for not just radio, but also television signals. Well, that took a while to figure out how that whole thing took place. And then all of a sudden, now we've got just millions of channels of news and information and everything else you want to know. And thousands and millions of YouTube channels and preferences. Those are all things that are part of the act, guys. Anyway, we're going to come back and talk about how we're going to connect some dots for you. So stay with us. You're listening to Agenda 21 Radio. Protecting your phone conversations from snooping agencies, foreign governments, and those who would use your conversations to hurt you and your family is the most important action that you can take today. DEF, Defense Enabling Assisting Framework, protects all your conversations and text messages. Don't find your conversations on social media sites or in the storage bins with big governments around the world. Protect your conversations today with the DEF system. I've used the DEF system since 2014 and have been 100% protected. Go to a21r.com, that's a21r.com, and sign up for the DEF system today. That's a21r.com and sign up for the DEF system today. Protect your conversations today with the DEF system.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of my pillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. My pillow will get you into that deep sleep faster and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Call 800-266-4715. That's 800-266-4715 when you use the promo code AGENDA. 800-266-4715, promo code AGENDA.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
Agenda 21 Radio is brought to you by Aram Solar. Yes, if you want to make sure your house is powered and you want solar, go to Aram Solar. But also, because of the recent behavior of California, boy, how appropriate it is we're talking about that right now. Shutting off power to 43 counties is not a fun thing. And by the way, it doesn't need to happen. But if it does happen, you need to be prepared. Get yourself a generator for your house. Aram Solar can do just that. It can provide electrical power at any time for any shortage that pops
pops on. If it, your power pops off, they will pop on with a generator. All you need to do is give them a call at 866-676-5276. That's 866-676-5276. That's a Romp Solar, the best solar you can get, but also the best generation you can get when your house runs out of energy. Don't let yourself be held hostage by the energy companies any longer. That's 866-676-5276, a Romp Solar.
We're also a nation of laws. That's part of our tradition.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
You know, we're talking right now about the situation that developed in Morgan Hill, California. I'm going to explain this, and we're going to get through this because we have a big thing going on with the court's decisions. Bill Carlson, who is one of our members of the New California State, in fact, he's the assembly member for New California State. Yeah, he's a retired restaurateur, and he's had many restaurants. He's big time in the business and understands fine restaurants to the local hot dog stand, you know. And he's an incredible guy. He's Mr. Protester, we call him. He drives around in a black Lincoln, and he opens up the trunk, and he's got protest signs already made. And then you can make your own. He's got the big yellow paper, and he's got the cardboard. The guy's just an amazing guy. If you want to protest, it's Bill. He'll be there. Anyway, so... This happened over the weekend. It says the State Department of the ABC, which is Alcohol Beverage Control, shuts down Morgan Hill outdoor dining without warning or interagency collaboration, according to City Hall. Now, what happened was ABC comes in and they say, we're shutting down all restaurants, period, over the weekend, just like that. And they never contacted the city, never contacted the county, never did anything, right? And says this is a response that he writes to the mayor after she comes out with a response that she's just as aggrieved as he is, right? And we went through this, and tomorrow we're going to give you a better explanation how this whole thing kind of fits together. So California, and again, Gavin Newsom says, shut it down. And everybody's supposed to jump and shut it down because he's being very selective. Now, mind you, he's not shutting down his own restaurant, you know, Plump Jack Winery. In Napa. Oh, no, they can serve, they can, but everybody else in Morgan Hill has to shut down. So he says, he writes this to the mayor, I am a retired restaurateur living in Morgan Hill. I've owned and operated many restaurants in Santa Clara County. Do you understand that our local Morgan Hill restaurants are preparing for a very busy July 4th weekend, and they have bought and prepared a huge amount of perishable product that will have to be thrown out at great loss if they are forced to close without notice? Says this blatant abuse of power and control is a slap in the face of all restaurant owners, workers, customers, and voters. I will make all attempts to organize a vote out all local incumbents if you bow to the tyrannical dictator governor as he tries to shut down our state's economies. William Carlson, Morgan Hill. Her reply. Now, Bill's an assemblyman with New California State. Thank you for reaching out, Mr. Carlson. We understand and are very concerned about the impact this could have on our Morgan Hill restaurants. We have been working since last night to understand why this happened and what is going on. So she's just, what is going on here? She's the mayor. This is happening all over the state, guys, ladies and gentlemen. Because the dictator's in charge. He's just sending ABC, Highway Patrol, other different agencies out to enforce laws that aren't there, and which there is no punishment. We had no advanced knowledge that this was happening, nor did we believe that the outdoor dining at our restaurants was out of compliance with any of the orders from the state or county. We are still investigating and are here to support our local businesses. So, anyway, that's where it was. So what happened? I'm going to shorten this up a little bit because we're going to come back and visit this tomorrow. It's a big part. They just stood in defiance and didn't close down. None of the restaurants did. And dang, if you're in the area of Morgan, go eat at one of the restaurants. They're still open. They're still serving because they're standing in defiance. And, of course, they did so because it's an unlawful order and they know it. Now, this is exactly what happened in my county. And they finally were pinning them down in a hearing. And we're talking about ABC and one of the other organizations. But they were having hearings for 12 restaurants because they were protesting being shut down for the same reason that just because there was no legitimacy to the shutdown. So they finally put it to ABC as to what law were they citing, because they weren't citing any law. There's no law as to reason, nor it's just because the edict of the governor, because he's a dictator in that order, of course, of enunciation. So what happened was that the ABC folks were forced to cite a law. So they cite a law. And they cite a law. This is the law they were citing to shut down the Silver Dollar Saloon, by the way, which was opened, I think, in 1852. And they were, in turn, citing a law from about 1858 and said, oh, you're running a brothel. And they're, what? It was a law that applied to brothels. Well, you know, we all understand the Gold Rush days, right? And Marysville was right in the heart of the Gold Rush business. And so was the Silver Dollar. But, you know, they're not a brothel. They're not a brothel today. I don't know if they were a brothel before. I can't speak for before, but I do know that, see, history tells me they're not a brothel today. I wonder if that's what they were doing, is they're calling all these Morgan Hills restaurants brothels, like they were calling all these other ones. So they packed up their clothes, and they did not enforce it, and they haven't enforced it in this county. Selective enforcement, or he just got spanked? How about that one? As he was spanked in the courts, and everybody lost all their businesses over the course. Millions of dollars that were lost to millions, but maybe billions of dollars over the course of Southern California as people tried to comply to the shutdown. Isn't that amazing? Well, we have another little thing going on here. Big story. Supreme Court rules presidential electors can be forced to uphold popular vote. This is big for the election, and it looks bad for Biden, actually. The Supreme Court sought to eliminate one of many potential problems facing the 2020 race for the White House Monday, ruling that states can block members of the Electoral College from ignoring the popular vote on Election Day and risk altering the course of history. The unanimous decision, 9-0, will prevent most of the 538 presidential electors from seeking to change the results of the presidential race when carrying out their ministerial duties a month after the election. 32 states already require that the people chosen on Election Day to cast ballots for the winner of their state's popular vote. In some of those states, rogue electors can be replaced or fined. 18 states have no such requirement. Now, what this means is that you, when you're selected to be one of these electors, you have to vote as to how everybody voted collectively for the candidate. The court ruled in cases from Washington, D.C. and Colorado where challenges to the rules for presidential electors resulted in opposite lower court rulings. A 9-0 decision on this, ladies and gentlemen. It said here, the Constitution's text and the nation's history both support allowing a state to enforce an elector's pledge to support his party's nominee and the state's voters' choice for president. Associate Justice Elena Kagan wrote in an opinion that name dropped Alexander Hamilton and the TV series Veep. In the Washington case, she said, the state instructs its electors that they have no ground for reversing the vote of millions of its citizens. That direction accords with the Constitution, as well as with the trust of a nation that there, we the people rule. Get it? We the people rule? How about that one, right? Yeah. Faithless electors. Supreme Court confronts faithless electors as 2020 presidential looms. During the last oral argument of the court's current term in May, justices on both sides of the ideological, this is really extraordinary. You get a 9-0 decision out of these people. Really, Elena Kagan to Justice Thomas? Hello, Elena Kagan. I don't think she's ever tried a court trial. Anyway, justices on both sides of the aisle expressed concern that electors could be bribed, particularly by the losing party in a close election. but they also expressed concern about the limits of powers to force electors' hands. One thing they knew, failure to act could put the nation in a bind if a razor-thin margin in November gives electors inordinate power to upend the election. Never before has this happened, but 10 electors were disloyal or tried to be in 2016 enough to change the results of 5 previous presidential elections. The 2020 race already faces unusual challenges. Many states are seeking to expand voting by mail. In the face of coronavirus pandemic, President Donald Trump has forced Republicans to move his convention speech from North Carolina to Florida, and presumptive Democratic nominee has warned that Trump might try to steal the election or refuse to leave office. What would that look like if he was refusing to leave office? I'm not sure, but I don't think it would look very good. Do you? I'm going to flip over here to see if Fox is covering this. Oh, they don't. No. They do have something about Chicago pastor on weekend violence, death of 7-year-old, people are afraid to leave their house. It's just too much, really. It is just too much. Let's face it. Nothing talking about this other than the federal judge ordered shutdown and emptying of the Dakota Access Pipeline. That's something we'll talk about that later. It's here. It's right here, politics. Then another part of it, now Kaepernick says July 4th about racism, tweet intercepted, but here's what he said before. Oh, we don't want to get into that. I want to get back into the Supreme Court rule. So you're pretty clear on this. And this is from Tyler Olson and Shannon Bream. I love Shannon Bream. I think she's one of the real reporters, a real solid reporter. Absolutely one of the best going on. Anyway, it says here the Supreme Court of Monday upheld state laws requiring those chosen for electoral college to back the popular winner. In a 9-0 decision, I want to say this, 9-0, boys, that just gives you confidence. The cases came from a group of Democratic electors that called themselves the Hamilton electors and voted for moderate Republicans instead of Hillary Clinton in 2016 in an unsuccessful effort to convince Republican electors to vote for somebody besides President Trump. Isn't it amazing? Yeah. Meet the faithless electors. They have a little comment about that. Among the devices states have long used to achieve their objective are pledge laws designed to impress on electors their role as agents of others. Justice Kagan wrote in the court's opinion that direction accords with the Constitution. Of course, that's a big thing. Though many voters don't realize it, when Americans cast their ballots in presidential elections, they are actually voting for electors who later cast the official ballots that decide the presidential election. They almost always rubber stamp the popular vote winner in their state, but at times have voted for a different candidate, as the Hamilton electors did in 2016. See, this is the shenanigans. Now, this is a big slap to the Democratic Party. Absolutely. See if we can get some of Shannon in here real quick. Here we go.
Court decision just out. Shannon Bream is standing by on the breaking news for us. As expected, we're starting to get some rulings from the Supreme Court. Our chief legal correspondent, anchor of the Fox News at Night, Shannon Bream. Shannon, what do you have? Good morning.
Yeah, Sandra, I'm reading right now. We have a pair of cases that involve faithless electors, people who are pledged and chosen by their states to go to the Electoral College and vote based on how the state basically tells them to vote, how the popular vote went down. There were a group of voters from Washington State. There was another in Colorado who both challenged this last time around, saying, I want to be able to, and I have the freedom and the right to, when I get to that vote for the Electoral College that they do after the popular vote all across the country, I want to vote how I want to. And the state said no. In some states, you can fine or sanction people. There are other remedies and methods for stopping them from doing what they do or punishing them if they do that. Today, in a unanimous opinion, the Supreme Court has said no.
No, you can't do it. No, 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 no. That's winning one for the Gipper. Absolutely. Thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio. Remember, stay strong, America. We are exceptional Americans.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
You're listening to Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio. Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.